a couple comments for the audience. First of all, we're not going to get to Senate Bill 537. We were going to present amendments related to Measure 37 claims process, and we're just not going to do that. With respect to Senate Bill 740, this says informational meeting, invited testimony only. It's not my intent to exclude anybody who wants to testify, so just strike that part, invited testimony only. All testimony is welcome, but we will not have a work session on this today. Also, as you can see, we have a reduced committee of one, two committee members, Senator Burdick and Senator Beyer, are on their way to Pendleton for a Judiciary Committee meeting. So that's going to leave Atkinson, Shields, and me. I have to leave for a meeting at 3:45, so we're going to kind of have a patchwork of participation here. And I apologize if that causes inconvenience or difficulties. But I'd like to go ahead and start with the presentation. If you could identify yourself. My understanding is you have a presentation that will take about 30 minutes.
That's right.
Okay, and then Jim, are you intending to testify, or are you just listening?
For the public hearing in 2 weeks.
Okay, fine. But okay, if anybody wants to testify today, that'd be fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I can just do a little introductory comment, that would be fine. And I appreciate everyone is here today, and I apologize. I did not know that the committee was not going to be a full committee, and we may want to repeat some of this information when we do give testimony, because I think it's really important information for the committee members to have. So, Mr. Chair, this committee is the outfall of Senate Bill 867, if I'm remembering correctly, from last session. And this was a task force that was brought together to look at dealing with electronic product stewardship in Oregon and how we would deal with products that were obsolete, and the best way for Oregon to take care of some of its own waste. And so this was a task force that I helped form. I was ex officio on the task force, but I attended as many meetings as I could. This was financially cobbled together with support from US EPA. Thankfully, we received a grant from US EPA. We also received some funding from some of the members of the task force, and OECD, Economic Development Department, pitched in some money. But this cost very little general fund money, and we were fortunate to have a lot of people who are sitting in the audience who also donated their time to help out. So I appreciate all the people who spent many hours putting very, very good work into this committee. And what you're going to hear today is some background for the Senate Bill 740, and this sort of sets the stage. So what I'm going to ask is if any of these PowerPoint presentations can be made available so we can have copies for all of the committee members. I think that would be really helpful. So I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you setting aside this time. I'm going to let the panel speak for themselves because they've spent many hours working on this report, and I just appreciate everybody who is here in the audience today for your input and assistance with this project.
Okay, thank you.
For the record, make sure and state your name.
Yes,
everybody.
My name's Pamela Brody-Hine, and I was part of the team of folks that facilitated and organized the committee. Go on.
My name is Wayne Reifer. I was a member of the committee and have participated in this issue for many years, an Oregonian.
Maybe we should go on to the next slide, and then we'll introduce folks. That's
okay.
Right. Thank you. What I'm going to do today is give a little background on the committee and talk about what we accomplished, and then describe the alternatives for statewide scenarios that we explored. Then Wayne Reifer of Reifer Environmental is going to talk about projections of recovery of e-waste in Oregon and market development and job creation that the committee looked at. Janet Matthews of Metro will then talk about education and outreach and the work that was done looking into a landfill ban. Greg Sampson of Earth Protection Services will talk about processor certification and permitting and the work that the committee did with regard to that. And Frank Morella of SHARP will give us a little perspective on the national situation. So, Senate Bill 867. was enacted in 2003, and it created the Electronic Product Stewardship Advisory Committee. Within that bill, electronic products were defined to include computers, monitors, large and small computer peripherals, so keyboards and printers and scanners and such, from residences and from small businesses, and also televisions. The committee met 7 times between February and November of 2004, and during that time we created 4 work groups which met numerous times in addition. The committee was comprised of 18 very diverse stakeholders. I'm not going to go through and read all those names, but you can see we have representation from business association, electronics associations, nonprofits, local and state governments, and manufacturers. The committee early on came up with a statement that defined our primary role, and that was to seek to improve opportunities for reuse and recycling of old and unwanted electronic products in Oregon, consistent with product stewardship principles, with attention to business development, job creation, responsible procurement, and outreach and education. So what did the committee accomplish in a year? Well, quite a bit, considering the diverse views that were held by the stakeholders within the committee. We developed guiding principles for reuse and recycling infrastructure of electronic products, and there was consensus around those 6 guiding principles, and I'll talk about those in a minute. We agreed on recommendations for education and outreach, a landfill ban, and processor permitting and certification. The committee also reviewed and assessed alternatives for statewide scenarios, environmental impacts of used electronics in Oregon, existing regulations, procurement guidelines, the role of reuse entities, job creation and market development, as well as projections for e-waste recovery in Oregon. So why is this important? Why is addressing electronic waste something that we should be doing? Households and small businesses in Oregon are generating a growing stream of used and obsolete electronic products. Production of electronic products requires significant amounts of natural resources. Obsolete electronic products are not easy to recycle. E-waste contains toxic components, such as heavy metals. And the public is increasingly interested and asking for more convenient recovery opportunities. And the flow of e-waste in Oregon is expected to only increase in coming years. So the 6 guiding principles that the committee developed. Consumer convenience. It should be as easy to reuse recycling options as it is to buy a new electronic product. Shared responsibility. So responsibility should be shared by the participants in the electronic chain of commerce. Encouraging reuse, and I can't emphasize enough that the committee really felt that reuse was so important. Environmentally sound management. So the management of the end of life of the product should be done in an environmentally sound manner. Equitable, should be equitable to all participants, and economically sustainable.
Can I just ask a question that you're probably going to get to, but I...
Sure.
Tell me how the reuse works generally. I mean, how does that work? You take the computer box and you reuse the box, or you reuse the components within the box?
All of the above. Depending on the component itself, sometimes it can be used as is, and it just needs some software. Sometimes it's taking the components apart and then reusing them.
So you would say a hard drive? You take a hard drive apart and reuse it?
Did you say?
You probably wouldn't take it apart, but you may take the hard drive out of one machine and put it into another.
Yeah, but then you have an old hard drive. I mean, I'm just wondering how that.
Yeah, and but for some uses.
For
that's
some
okay.
uses, that's okay.
That's okay.
Okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
The committee. One of the work groups within the committee was focused on statewide scenarios, alternatives. And the committee initially looked at 8 different alternatives and then chose 3 that seemed the most viable and or had been implemented elsewhere, and those became the Tier 1 alternatives. And those include a government-run system, an advanced recycling fee, and partial producer responsibility. A government-run system basically is that the government runs it. It's financed by the government operates the system using waste fees or whatever finances it in whatever way is appropriate. Collection services are provided directly by the government or via contractors, and the recyclers then would be contracted to consolidate, transport, and process the equipment. The second option is the advanced recycling fee, or an ARF, as it's known as. And that's where a legislated fee is collected on new product sales. And there are 2 alternatives for managing the fee. The first is where the government manages the fee. The second is where there is a third-party organization that manages the finances. The ARF covers the cost to collect, transport, and process all products, including orphan and historic products. And the government is responsible for ensuring that the system is working as it's intended. The third option that the committee looked at was partial producer responsibility. And that's where local communities are responsible for the collection of products from the consumers. But then manufacturers take the responsibility for products at the consolidation points. Responsibility for orphan products is then distributed amongst the manufacturers. And again, government's responsible for ensuring that the system is working properly. The committee decided or agreed to a vote on these 3 options as for informational purposes. The question that was posed was as follows. Of the 3 Tier 1 options developed by this advisory committee, which one would be your organization's preferred long-term approach in Oregon? And I would like to emphasize that the vote was intended to be used for informational purposes, and the results do not constitute a recommendation by the committee. The results were as follows. Number 1, the government-run system got 0 votes, not very popular. The second option, an advanced recycling fee, got 7 votes. The partial manufacturer producer responsibility got a single vote. And then 5 members felt that no statewide approach was necessary and we should just maintain the status quo. And 4 members chose to abstain. They felt that it was most appropriate for their organizations not to cast a vote. And then these all add up to 17. 1 committee member was absent and did not provide an absentee vote. So I'm going to turn it over to Wayne.
Mr. Chair, can I just add something?
Yes, here? You may.
Okay, thank you. And for the members who just walked in and unfortunately missed the introduction, I just wanted to quickly give you a little bit of background on this. This is an issue that I've been working on for about 3 years. Came to my attention because of the problem in Oregon that we have a very disparate system for dealing with electronic product stewardship. And what do you do with old computers, cell phones, many electronic products in their end of their life? And so what these folks in front of you are doing is reporting on a year-long task force that I put together to come up with some different solutions and different proposals for how to deal with product stewardship in Oregon. So we've asked the group of folks that are in the room today to come forward and talk about some of the solutions that we found. There was consensus, and I don't know if you had mentioned this, on many of the things that you're going to hear today. There was not consensus reached on what, if any, legislation would be needed, and Senate Bill 740 is a bill that I put forward, not that the committee put forward, not that the task force put forward. So I just wanted it to be clear that in 2 weeks when we have a hearing on the bill that I have proposed, it does not have a stamp of approval from the whole task force that you're hearing from today. But there was a lot of good things that came out of that task force. Some of them need statutory changes, some don't. But I wanted to make sure that the committee understood that there's a lot of things that we did reach consensus on. You're going to hear about many of those here today. So I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
My name is Wayne Reifer from Cedar Mill, soon to be Beaverton, I understand.
we're getting to that.
It's my great
we'll slow that down, believe me.
The sore point with this chair. So.
My great pleasure today to watch your eyes blur over as I present numbers. My job is to kind of put a frame around the nature of the problem, the scope and dimensions of the problem. I participated in the advisory committee. I participated with others in a national negotiation, which has been going on for 3 years between manufacturers and all the other stakeholders. And many of the numbers were developed in that process. And then we tried to have them make sense for Oregon. These are the questions that I'll try to answer. What's happening now with all these old products? Secondly, if we set up a program, how much would we expect to arrive? What would we have to be paying for with some program that would come in? This includes not only products that are kind of every day becoming obsolete, but also a stockpile of products. A bunch of them are in my basement. I'll bet you there's several in yours. And we know they're out there. The current disposition of e-waste in Oregon, these are some numbers. I'm just going to highlight the top numbers. I'm not going to read every number. Note amongst those first two bullets, that's pretty typical. About 10% of the product is being recycled. Those are about consistent with national numbers. Not a lot is being recycled of the product. There's a lot of difficulties with numbers because some comes out of business, some comes out of residences, and it goes back and forth. So I just tried to capture the numbers we do know. Another important thing on this slide, the California did some studies, and they found the surveys of the public, and they found roughly half of the households have an old computer monitor or TV sitting in storage not being used. In other words, you walk down the street and all the houses on the right hand side each have one if you spread them out evenly. That's an idea. So in your community, count up your households and you can figure out that's about how many are sitting out there. Very rough approximation. The two methods are used to predict how much product will arrive in a program, how much should be recycled. One is based upon a computer model that we build from sales, yearly sales of computers and TVs, lifespan of them, and then disposition pathways and that sort of thing. And the other approach that we use is looking at existing collection programs. How much have they been getting in? I'm going to show a little bit about each of those two. I hope you'll be remembering these numbers when we have our hearing in a few weeks. Let me point out two numbers or a couple numbers that are important down in the bottom right-hand corner. Now, this is from this waste flow model. Theoretically, how much product is out there to be recycled? Take your community. You know how many people there are, live in your community. And these numbers, pounds per capita, tell you about how much product there is that would be recycled, would be recyclable. This is the other way of looking at it. What are existing collection programs performing at? Okay, we only have two kind of long-term programs in the U.S., so we looked at them and tried to capture their numbers and look at their performance in the latter few years. You see, those numbers about 2.5 pounds per person. That's about half of the number you saw on the previous slide that's theoretically out there. But this gives you an idea of what we expect to be coming in, and then we can figure out how much it's going to cost and all those nice questions from that. So we took, here's what we could look at in Oregon at assuming it's 2.5 pounds per person over the next few years, last year through next year. You know, it's 4,500, 4,600, 4,700 tons of material that we would expect, you know, about 250,000 units that would be coming back into a collection program. We took a look then, we looked at some at cost, but we looked mostly at the question of how good is this for the economy? If we set up a program, you know, that has paying people to do some of this recycling, and this is what we came up with, roughly 36 direct jobs. Notice this program is going to be very efficient indeed, representing a little over $1 million in wages and benefits with a multiplier effect that just about doubles that. Not obviously huge job creation because it is going to be a very efficient program if it's set up. Well, we looked at what are some of the barriers and opportunities that need to be overcome in the development of markets and development of the program. And these are some of the things that the present system is facing. Why the present system isn't recycling any more than that 10%. There's lack of uncertainty. Businesses are not able to go out there and make investments. There's lack of money to make those investments with. It does cost to recycle. That's the problem. There is weak infrastructure. Systems need to be developed for collection and processing. There's, frankly, a lack of consumer knowledge. There was a survey done of the public, done by eBay, and they found out that the main thing is people just don't know that they can recycle these things. People want to recycle them. They're just sticking them away in their basement until they figure out or get a chance to recycle them. That's the main thing that we're really trying to address. And then also there's an uneven playing field out there. Some recyclers are taking these products, putting it into a shipping container, sending it off to China or other Asian countries where it's dismantled under very unsafe and poor conditions, and that's a very cheap way to do it. Others are handling it in a responsible way domestically, and so obviously that benefits those who handled it irresponsibly. So that's another aspect that is trying to be addressed by this. I think that's all my slides.
Well, we'll try to remember those numbers.
Yes, please. And there will be a test at the end of this, I'm sure. So don't pay any attention to this right now.
Good afternoon, Senator Rango, members of the committee. My name is Janet Matthews. I'm Policy and Program Manager with Metro in the Solid Waste and Recycling Department. And I have been asked to talk about two things in the committee's report today. The first is the discussion that we had and the recommendation around a disposal ban on e-waste. And the second item is education for various targeted audiences. We had rather extensive discussions about rationales for a disposal ban on e-waste. A number of states, Minnesota, Massachusetts, California, have enacted these as part of a statewide law that has been implemented. The advisory committee members agreed that diversion of e-waste from disposal to a higher and better use is desirable, and that a reliable flow of e-waste to a collection and processing infrastructure would probably be aided by a ban on disposal. However, we also agreed that disposal bans should not be viewed in isolation. The committee members would support consideration of a disposal ban if it follows a number of prerequisite policy conditions that are generally considered to be part of a comprehensive e-waste program. And these conditions are a funding source, either through an advanced recycling fee or producer responsibility framework that would basically help to build up the infrastructure for e-waste or e-scrap collection, transportation, and processing. Secondly, markets. Those funds have to be used to be dedicated at least in part to programs that would emphasize the enhancement of existing or new end-use markets. Third, standards. Environmental health and safety standards really should be developed for sound management of the collected materials, including reporting and documentation procedures for end-use markets. And fourth, infrastructure. Adequate collection, handling, and processing infrastructure really must be conveniently available to the public so that they have a place to take this material for reuse and recovery. And the committee report goes on to identify that after those particular policy considerations or conditions are addressed, a disposal ban option certainly can be considered, but particular attention should be given to the objects of the disposal ban. What would be the universe of electronic products to be banned from disposal? The enforcement of that ban, the appropriate level for that enforcement, whether it's the generator, collector, or disposal facility, and new supplies. We certainly want to identify the potential impact on the existing infrastructure of any potential new supplies of e-scrap that would result from a disposal ban. So that, in a nutshell, is the committee's recommendations on a disposal ban. I want to turn to education now. There are a number of target audiences, certainly for education. I should say that this is the one area that the advisory committee was specifically tasked in the enabling legislation with developing recommendations on, recommendations for educating consumers and businesses in the area of e-waste recycling. So we noted that there are a variety of target groups that need information about where to take e-waste or e-scrap, and those target groups included consumers, small businesses, large businesses, institutions like schools, local governments, retailers, and recyclers. And the report identifies that all of those target groups will need to know, first, how to donate old equipment for reuse or recycling. Second, why it is important to manage old or unwanted equipment differently from other waste. And third, that their old electronics were handled in an environmentally sound manner. Businesses and institutions would also need to know what legal requirements for e-waste management would apply to them. Local governments would need all of that information, plus regulations for their community and businesses for program outreach and information, environmental and legal requirements for electronics recycling facilities locating in their area, and environmental and legal requirements for collecting electronic products should they choose, the local governments, to offer this service. There are a number of other target audiences and their needs that are identified in this report, but I won't go over each one of those. I will say that in terms of a summary of our recommendations, that the advisory committee agreed that there is not one single best way to reach the many target groups, certainly due to the diversity of Oregon's region. Some methods, such as radio ads, might be very effective in one region but be cost prohibitive in other areas. So the committee identified two outreach methods which could be used to reach all the target groups. And those two things would be a website or websites and a call center. The report recommends as high priority recommendations on a call center that development of a call center be investigated that could serve households and small businesses within the state on reuse and recycling operations for electronics. It should be a one-stop, one phone number brand like 1-800-HELP-E-WASTE, something that would be memorable for where to get information in Oregon about electronics recycling options. And then secondly, the website, a state agency or a public-private partnership could take the lead and develop and host a website as a portal for statewide information, coordinating ongoing updates with information from industry, with reuse and recycling operations highlighted, specific information for local governments, etc. I'll conclude with that.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. First of all, I'd like to apologize for the allergies that have affected me today, so pardon me.
My portion about those.
If I could share, I would, trust me. My portion of the program is the need for certification.
What's your name, please?
I'm sorry. Greg Sampson, Earth Protection Services.
Thank you.
Pardon me. Currently in the U.S., there's only a handful of certification or permitting programs in place for electronic scrap collectors or processors. While others are being developed, However, none of these are considered to be the one certification program to be accepted and recognized throughout the industry. Few e-scrap collectors and processors outside of the state of California and Maine have been certified under these existing programs. Example, the IAER, the International Association of Electronics Recyclers, has over 110 members, yet they've only got four of their members that are certified, with five more in the queue right now. Unless certification is standardized throughout the U.S., which EPA is currently working on, e-scrap handlers will be left with a patchwork of standards struggling to follow these, such as e-scrap handlers here in this state, in the Portland metropolitan area, would be trying to follow the Washington State regulations as well. The goals for a certification program, first of all, it will be to protect the public health and welfare and to protect the environment. Second, to ensure e-scrap businesses in Oregon are doing so in an environmentally responsible manner in the way they're handling the materials. Third, to create a consistent known environment so the public and private investment can be made in electronics recycling infrastructure. And fourth, to create a level playing field that e-scrap recyclers, including the downstream processors, which handle materials in the environmentally sound manner, are not undercut by irresponsible recyclers. The committee made certification program recommendations. First was to adopt the EPA National Certification Program once it's implemented. The ballpark figure is approximately in 2 years is what they're looking at, and after this last couple of weeks meeting, it seems like it'll take that long to get it off the ground. In the interim, the committee suggests using the standards such as EPA plug-in to recycling guidelines as a voluntary informational screening tool for the selection of an e-scrap processor. As an incentive, recyclers who demonstrate compliance with the EPA's e-cycling guidelines would be included in the statewide referral website, such as DEQ, DAS, or Metro, or the one that Jan referred to, if that was able to go into process. And that essentially, the developing of a certification process would provide a launching platform to take e-scrap in any direction that the state wanted to, because it would provide that base structure to handle the flow of material. For instance, landfill bans. California, if I'm not mistaken, enacted a landfill ban before they had infrastructure, therefore they had a problem. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, my name is Frank Moreller, and I'm manager of corporate environmental affairs for Sharp Electronics, and I was a member of the task force. I would like to give a brief review of the national and state steps to address this issue. One of the first items, of course, everyone's heard about is the NEPSI, National Electronic Product Stewardship Initiative, which was a three-year multi-stakeholder negotiations, and I was a member of that representing Sharp, and 3 years at times seemed like 30. There was much progress made, but there was not a final agreement recommendation for a national program made. In the meantime, states are taking action. California implemented an advanced recycling fee model, and Maine has introduced, as beginning to implement, a producer responsibility model. There was a number of bills that have been introduced, including 2005. There are 23 bills as of this date, and we expect to be that to increase again. The NEPSI initiative, well, they did not come to a final plan. They did come up with several documents which represent the needs of a national system. One was in environmental sound management standards for recyclers, which is part of what Greg was talking about, included in that. Something called the base level service document. What would be the base level of a program service that would be provided, which is was needed to make sure that the convenient reason it was convenient and available to everyone, and so you could get an idea of how much the system would cost. And a plan for a voluntary intermediate system. Some steps of that are actually in place in Oregon. The one thing it did identify was a hybrid financing system, which would start off as an ARF and then transition after 7 years under certain conditions to a shared responsibility program. The current state laws that are in place, California has an advanced recycling fee, which they have started collecting as of January 1st. Our understanding is that the fee collection is going on. One of the concerns with that law was that internet sales people would not collect the fee. And our information is that at least the top 10 internet sales sellers are collecting and remitting and will be remitting the fee. Including such people as Dell, Gateway, and Amazon.com. Okay. In Maine, they have started the partial producer responsibility program. Plans were due from manufacturers by March 1st. The information we received from Maine for 23 manufacturer plans have been submitted. They have seeking a few more. They have identified a few others that they're seeking. However, we have identified 175 television brand manufacturers alone. So right now it does not look like the compliance is there yet. What is the state role in the national system? That's one of the questions we've had. And one of the things that they agreed in the task force that a national system is needed. But it is understood that states may initiate their own programs, and clearly some have, and there are several others that are looking to do that. In order for the national system to work, the state programs should defer to that when it's developed, and they should be consistent with that. And the state action would be what is used to pressure the national lawmakers to address this issue. And right now we have seen some movement. Senator Wyden has introduced a federal bill, and Representative Thompson of California has also introduced a bill. Okay. That brings to the question of why Oregon and why now. We know there are some local communities that are setting up programs, and others have heard the request from their constituents, but clearly have no means, meaning no financial needs, to implement the programs. The infrastructure that is in place right now is not sufficient to handle the large volumes that would be needed. The infrastructure that would be needed to handle large volumes is not in place yet. And the way to get these two items is basically money. There's a financing model that's needed if Oregon wants to move forward and develop a statewide program. Okay. The committee did evaluate the three scenarios to finance the infrastructure, and right now, I would like to speak as Sharp and a member of a coalition that's supporting SB 40. It's a 12-company coalition, and I have a copy of our white paper on the advanced recycling fee that I've submitted for the record. The industry leaders that are supporting this bill, we have some of us have established programs. And or have been supporting pilot programs. Sharp has supported hundreds of pilot programs in the last 3 years, including several in this state, to help develop the infrastructure, collect data, and try and determine the best way to address this issue. Okay. The representatives of this coalition is virtually the entire television industry and a significant portion of the laptop computer market, including companies such as IBM, Toshiba, Sony, and Sharp. Okay. We're acting because the trade associations, because there is a divide in industry, really haven't been able to come up with a strong position on this issue. So, and that's...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Morella, what is the likelihood, do you think, that there will be in the near future, let's say next 5 years, because the federal government works in excruciatingly slow time frame, that we will see a national national legislation on e-waste.
Clearly, the pressure is starting to build. I think to get a national program within the next 5 years, there's going to have to be some more pressure. It would make it easier for the federal government if the approaches the states took were somewhat consistent. But unless that happens, I'm not sure we see something in the next 5 years. We certainly see some steps being taken. The Wyden bill is certainly an interesting approach to look at this issue.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Any other comments?
Just that it's all fascinating to me. And, I mean, it drives me crazy that we haven't already done something. You know, we're a society that builds mountains of garbage, and now we've got e-garbage. That's what I'd call it. You can be nice and call it e-waste. But, you know, we build the mountains first before we try and figure out what to do with it. I guess it's the American way. One question. Isn't this a good time in a competitive marketplace, I understand that prices are going to come down, but when I can buy a computer this year that's better and faster and everything else than one a couple years ago and it's a few dollars less, this would be a good time to have that fee tacked on. Are we going to run out of time to do that, or can we continue to do that on into the future if we can never get ourselves legislatively lined up to do that?
It's an interesting question. I think that the fee is a good way to certainly cover the costs of the waste being generated today. The way that the system is seen to work is that the fee that's collected on products and all the sales sold in a calendar year would cover the waste being generated in that calendar year. So in that sense, it's a good way to make sure that happens. And one of the nice things about it is that if a company decides to get out of the marketplace, it won't affect the financing mechanism of the system, because 100% of the market will still be there to cover the cost.
I noticed on your
follow-up.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, sir. I just noticed on the slide you had reference to the television sets and the laptops. What happened to the old desk computers in that list?
IBM is in there. They're clearly the old desk this time. That's part of where the split is within industry, to be honest.
Can you explain that?
Sure. I don't want to speak for these companies, but there are companies that have, and you saw from the task force, there was support, some small support for a producer responsibility model. Under that model, the manufacturer, if the collection would be done by local communities, and the manufacturer would take it back from there, and they would take their costs, they would cover that cost. There would be no funding provided for the actual collection from the consumer. And getting the stuff to the consolidator. But once you get the consolidator, the manufacturer would come and get it. The problems we see with that is because it's an individual manufacturer responsibility, instead of getting one large pile at a consolidator, there'll be a Sharp pile, there'll be a Panasonic pile, there'll be an IBM pile. The other problem with that, from a state point of view, is that if I'm doing it, I'm going to use the recyclers that I'm familiar with. And we've been doing working with recyclers since 1992. We have some that we have criteria, and we have some that they meet. And those are the ones we're going to use, and we're going to use them regardless of where we have to do it. That's what we're dealing with in Maine right now. Under the Maine law, they're saying we have to use whatever recycler and consolidator they identify, we will use our own, because by doing that, we assuming the liability, so we're going to use the people that we trust and that we believe are going to minimize that liability, that risk. So that's kind of where the issue are. They're saying that the producer responsibility works for their business model. We're saying the advance fee works for industry as a whole in the best way.
Any other questions? Wait, is that Matt? Is this
okay? Thank you very much for coming. If no one else would like to testify, I'll close the informational hearing and close the committee. Thank you very much.